I mean, our recording.
Yeah.
But we always do.
But we always
kind of meander in. Yeah.
Some of the banter is the best stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of like so how most podcasts I listen to are. It's like they don't say, "Oh, and we're on," and we're just, they just. Whoever's in charge of the board just hits record.
We usually wait for Todd to play a little bit of music.
Oh, I forgot.
Oh, there it is.
it's the only smooth jazz I like.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's right. Sweet Mama Blues on the video editing software, I think is what it's called.
Oh, okay.
So, hey, man, you got to.
is there a license fee?
No.
I think that's public domain.
Public domain there.
Well, Todd, you let us know when it's.
I already told you we're recording.
That's right. So. Hey, everybody, thank you for joining us. We are Our Town Podcast coming to you from the historic Renton Civic Theater in beautiful, beautiful downtown.
On the stage, even.
Renton.
Yes, we're fancy
on the
today.
Stage. And to my right is Cousin Todd on the big board. Further to my right, to your left, is Mike himself.
Hi.
And we have a very special guest today. We have the actual mayor of the city of Renton, Armando Pavone.
Pavone, yeah. Good to be here. Thank you for being here.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
You bet. Kind of a funny story of how I ended up here, right?
My sister. I hope you're not watching, Kathy, but my crazy sister tracked him down, tackled him in the McClendons, and said, "You're going to be on this podcast,
or I'm whether you like it or not.
Track you down, whether you like it or not."
She was actually really nice. Yeah. I was striking up a conversation with her, and I don't know how we went down this road. And she's like, "Oh, you're the mayor. You have to go on this podcast."
Nothing else on your docket, right?
Yeah. Not busy at all.
Yeah, it sounded like a trick in the beginning, and then when I heard Mike Moskowitz, I'm like, oh, it is a trick.
Yeah. That guy.
And this is probably the only time we introduce Mike as we don't introduce him as Mayor Mike. So we gave him the Mayor Mike
as because he knows everybody. He's been a Renton fixture for his entire life. So
yeah, like a four block radius.
Everybody knows Mike.
Yeah, up in the Highlands, they have no idea.
No idea who this guy is.
Who?
he's the unofficial consigliere, right?
Oh, I like it. There you go.
So this episode, obviously, we come to you every week from Renton, and Renton is where we make our home. But in this episode, we're going to talk a lot of specifics about Renton, and hopefully there's a lot of Renton watchers and listeners on this episode. But, you know, we're going to try to relate this to sort of small cities, I guess is what you would consider Renton throughout the country. And so hopefully the discussion we're having equates to your life wherever you may be across the country.
And if you have not been to Renton and have the ability to do so,
come on down.
Yeah, no,
definitely, man.
It's a great place.
Come on down. I got some fun facts about Renton to start us off. And Mr. Mayor, please, correct me if I'm wrong on some of this, but I believe that Renton is the eighth largest city in the state of Washington, and that we have about 104,000 residents. Does that sound about right?
Actually, we're a little bit more than that now. After this last census, I think we're between 106 and 107,000.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
I get all my information from the internet, which I tend to believe wholeheartedly. So, obviously, this is, without a doubt
the truth. That's not entirely true, because we did a whole episode about cryptids, and you were like, that's not true. That can't be true.
Cryptids. I missed that episode.
Yeah, no.
You got to go back. It's a good one. The interesting fact, though, is that Everett, which is a little bit bigger in population, I think about 110,000. But they're more dense. That Renton is actually over about 28 square miles.
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
Yes. And the other thing that makes Everett feel different is it's the center of power for their country, right? And so when I went up there, I was so surprised because their population is very similar to Renton, but it has almost a big city feel. It's been around longer. Some of the historic buildings are kind of have that 1950s, 60s feel to it. It's a great city.
Yeah.
And they have a really good mayor up there, too.
No,
Mayor Kaya. Yeah, she was one of the first mayors I got to meet after I was elected.
Nice.
One of the big challenges coming in was COVID happening right away.
Right away.
Wow.
Yeah, I had just weeks before before COVID. And so the connections, that's really what makes a lot of the regional stuff work, is having those personal relationships with other elected officials, and that was really hard to establish early on.
So. Yeah, but you had been on the council for what, 8 years, or just 4 years before becoming?
No, I was 6 years.
Six
I had
years,
full
okay.
term. I was in my second term when I decided to run for mayor. Yeah. So, and you know, you can be a council member in different ways, and
that's
some
true.
Council members are very active regionally. We have one council member that's on a number of regional boards, and sure. some council members really have, you know, family and work life, and so you can do it either way. There's no right way to be a council member, other than, you know, participating and reading the materials sure. and yeah. showing up so, and
right
yeah being a good collaborator.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. One of the facts I found was that our population of Renton is up pretty significantly since 2010. And I don't remember if that was the year that Renton annexed Skyway and West Hill, or parts of Skyway.
We didn't.
It wasn't Skyway.
No, we annexed about 30,000 residents, and that was the Benson Cascade area.
Okay, that was me. I was up there.
Yeah.
Because I remember my neighbor across the street was City of Renton, and I was King County. So when I called 911, the sheriffs would come.
Right.
When he called 911, the city police would come, which was always kind of fun.
Yeah, the West Hill has not been annexed.
No.
Okay.
We could do a whole show.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But 17%, I mean, that's a huge growth.
Yeah, and we have a lot of growth on the horizon. Renton is one of the fastest growing cities. We're the fourth fastest growing city in King County, and I'm not sure where we land on the state level, but we're behind Seattle, Bellevue. Redmond's growing right now at unreal rates, and then we're just really close behind. There are over 8,000 units in the pipeline to be built.
Wow.
Those are, you know, not conceptual. These are actually in the pipeline. They've gone through some part of the permitting process. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Does that include the new Renton Highlands residential?
Yeah, the mixed use.
No, anything that's already built is not included. These
I think it was in the process, but that's 8,000 just in the.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Some really big projects on coming online.
And I would think with Redmond, they still had a lot more raw land than Renton had, so maybe they're just mowing through their. A
lot of farmland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not all places at once, but it seems that Renton's growth spurt hasn't caused, you know, difficult growing pains. It seems pretty...
Well, the thing with growth is you really need to have a balanced growth, and that's something that we've strived for, and we've really been lucky, because it's hard to kind of predict how the businesses are going to move into and out of your cities, and we've done a lot of economic development work. Hmm. And so having the Sounders or Seattle Children's Hospital or Topgolf, having those businesses come in really help kind of balance out the city, providing jobs and the tax base, right?
Because
it's a new resident doesn't pay for itself, or a new home.
That's true, it's got to be the business.
So you need that balance. And Renton, we really have an amazing economy down here. That's the... You know, there are cities of our size, but not of our size, that have really the economy and the engine that drives the city.
Is that mostly with the big industry that we have down here, the Boeing and the PACCARs and the
Kenworth?
Yeah. We've diversified over the years. It used to be 60%+ of our workforce was Boeing, and it's nothing near that anymore. So we intentionally, in the 90s, tried to diversify. And as Boeing reduced their footprint down, it gave growth opportunities.
And you feel good about the direction that's been going?
I feel really good. Yeah.
Right on. I'll take it.
Yeah. Really good. The fights that we're having to make sure that Renton gets transit, that we are taking care of on a regional stage. And I think transit's the big key right now. Making sure that bus rapid transit that'll be coming down the 405, that'll be treated like a train. Making sure that those two stops in Renton, not only are they functional, but they've got the parking and the structures around it to support it. So,
is that where the Sound Ford used to be there on Grady and Rainier? Is that going to be the new transit stop or transit center?
Yes, that'll be the new BRT transit stop, but it will also be where Metro's transfer station will be moved from downtown to that corner, really kind of consolidating all of the the moving pieces.
And then part of the park and ride remains and all that kind of stuff, or?
The park and ride, well, we'll consolidate all of that.
Yeah.
And what comes out of that actually is a TOD area, which we've done the study and started the plan. You can create a whole economy around the fact that you've got this transit stop there.
Yes.
Residential units of all types, affordable to market in between the entire spectrum.
And that's zoned for a more dense housing as well down there. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Huh. That's the idea.
I don't know. I think that's a great plan. What's TOD?
Oh, transportation oriented development.
Oh,
yes.
Geez. There you go.
I don't know.
Not quite the military, but there's lots of acronyms city government.
But that's one I actually like because it is all based on transportation. And I was thinking about cars because I think about cars a lot. And for what they do, and obviously mobility is important for commerce and et cetera, but they take up a lot of space, man.
Yeah.
They do, parking and everything. It's like a lot. Transit is much more concentrated and human-centered, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a better payoff for that investment.
And I think that the younger generations are ready to embrace that.
Oh,
I think there's generations that you're not going to get out of their cars. That's just the plan.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's not going to happen overnight, but I think the more convenient you make it and trying to catch up with communities that have been doing this for years. I mean, you go to Europe, it's just amazing the way you can get around from.
Yeah. And there's not cars parked everywhere. You're not weaving in and out of cars all the time, you know?
It surprised me. I was in years ago, my first time to Europe was in this little Bavarian town called Aying, which they actually have a beer, Ainger. But we got up the next morning and walked a few blocks, and from this little Bavarian, you know, centuries old town, sure there was a train right there, just walking distance, and rode it into me.
Nice.
Oktoberfest.
Because I think they built, like you're saying with the TOD, it's the train came, and then they built around that, right?
Well, this was the opposite way.
That's what made it so
unique, is that it was a centuries-old town, this old Bavarian town.
Sure. No, I guess it's
And they were able to integrate the train, kind of this modern technology, without losing the flavor and the feel of the Bavarian town.
Yeah.
So.
Hmm. Wow. If only we could do that here.
Somebody could come up with a plan.
And this is probably going to be a dumb question, but is there like a local bus that goes through town and like takes you from downtown to like the landing and other places nearby?
So there's one right now. It's called the Rapid Line. And so there's two Metro Rapid Lines. There's one coming, the I Line, but there's one that goes from, I don't know the exact spots.
I think it's from the landing.
Burien towards the landing. That's the cuts through.
Cuts through downtown.
But we used to have the downtown area rapid transit, which is what I think you're thinking.
Just a bus that takes you to local places.
Like a circulator.
Yeah, one that just goes through town and just kind of goes in a big circle.
Was that a city thing or was that a county thing?
That was a county thing, actually. But there was a developer in town. He's no longer with us, but he had the idea of actually doing the infrastructure for an autonomous trolley that would take you from downtown.
I heard
to
about
landing,
that. Yeah.
Right. I mean,
oh, wow.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah. That would be fun.
Park Avenue and Grady really is kind of the spine of Renton. So connecting that TOD area, Grady and Rainier, over to the landing really connects the whole downtown area.
Right.
Yeah.
And our flagship school and
The reason why I was asking is I live up on historic Renton Hill, and there's nothing up there as far as buses. And I was like, could we get like a small bus, like a short bus up there that kind of cycles through up there and into downtown and back up again?
Yeah, I don't. That might be a county thing.
Yeah, that's a county thing.
They control the metro.
You're gonna have to walk down the hill. I live up there too.
Okay,
I know what you're talking.
I walked down it once, and I'm like, I'm never walking up that hill. I'm getting an Uber.
Coach Savage used to make us run that thing.
Yeah,
it's hard.
Yeah, you actually. I think you're Savage. You're dating yourself. I think you know my housemate Chris Swanson.
Oh, sure.
He told me, he goes, ask him about him having a decoy, because he has a decoy for when he doesn't want to do interviews and stuff. Okay. I think he was messing with me.
Oh.
I think he was messing with me.
It's like JFK, you know, needs to go out somewhere and do something. And
did he have a body double?
I don't know.
Body double.
Probably not. I mean, there's a lot of like rumors around. I don't know that Mayor has the, or that Renton has the.
It could be a bucket list item. Just for a day. Have like three. I'm just wandering through town.
I can be kind of gullible sometimes, so I think maybe he was screwing with
me. He was messing with you.
I don't even have a detail. I just
I have
a park worker that walks behind me throwing rocks at people.
Yeah,
and then picks them up right afterwards. Make sure they're not a trip hazard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Renton is also a super super diverse city. Again, my internet facts is that we are 48% Caucasian, I believe, and this is sort of roundabout numbers: 8% African American, 24% Asian, and 16% Hispanic, I think is what the breakdown that I read is, based on census information.
Yeah, that's close. We are a majority-minority city.
Yeah.
We have been for a number of years.
Yeah.
And I believe both Renton and Kent are in the top 20 for the most diverse communities in the country.
Yeah.
We're up there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it's great. Yeah, since
that's amazing.
I think it's wonderful.
The
so much so that I just really don't think about it. It's just so regular, everyday
it's
thing.
It's just part of Renton. Yeah.
It's just how it is, right?
Yeah.
And you're starting to see it in the it's reflected on the council. You're starting to see it with the workforce a little bit. So, I mean, you know, cities change. And we're definitely part of that. And we've embraced that change. We've got a new department, Equity, Housing, and Human Services. And the gal that runs that department is doing a lot of outreach, trying to figure out who those communities are that we're serving. And what the some of the facts that have been interesting is some of the fastest growing communities are ones that we didn't realize. Brazilian and the other one is the fact that we have a growing renter community. In all segments, not just low income.
Sure.
Young adult and millennials, everybody is, it used to be the American dream, white picket fence, 2.51 car, kids, and your car, and your job for 30 years, and your attire, and that whole thing. There's such a change in the workforce, and there's such a change in people's habits and what are important to people now, that having a house and a home isn't always the first priority for some young workers. And so you're seeing more and more renters. Yeah. And so understanding that they're part of our community, it's the inclination to really look at homeowners as being who you represent. But that's not really the case. There's, I believe it's 40 or 45% of our population is renters.
I'm a renter.
And does that track nationwide? Is that just kind of a cultural shift, or is that because, you know?
I think you're seeing that in different areas, in different metropolitan areas. You're seeing it for sure. Yeah, depending on the city.
Yeah. Also, that our median income in this city is about $84,000 a year, which I was a little bit surprised to see. But then when you think about it, with all the industries moving in here, the different job market that you were talking about earlier, it's not that unbelievable.
Well, yeah, like the big industries, I think, are like, you know, of course, Boeing. But then there's also like the Hawks have their training facility here in Renton. And Hasbro has Wizards of the Coast here, so
I was going to say that Renton is home to Boeing, Wizards of the Coast, PACCAR. We've got the new Top Golf, which is sort of a destination thing. We've got the Landing here. We've also got the only IKEA in Western Washington, unless they built another one.
Have another one.
Yeah. So
we also have the final resting place of Jimi Hendrix
here. As well,
it's a type of industry, I guess.
I mean, that's a touristy thing.
Well, just as a home too,
And they've done a great job with it. I'm not sure who, if that was family or.
I think the family did all that. Yeah,
it's wonderful.
Yeah,
they did a really good job with it, and it is. Actually, years ago, I had a server that was from Georgia. Her and her husband moved up here, and they moved to Las Vegas for 5 years. Then they moved to Seattle for a period of time, and they were just staying here. They're kind of transient. They were seeing the world before they settled down back in Georgia. And I asked her one day, it's like, why Seattle? Why, you know, where'd the pin on the map end up in Seattle? And she said, We moved here because we wanted to come and see Jimi Hendrix play.
Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah. And Seattle has Bruce and Brandon Lee as well.
Yeah. Yep. So back to the industry. We have the Sounders, which is a big
deal. That's right, yeah.
That complex sports, is going to be amazing. And then the other part is Blue Origin. Blue Origin definitely.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, they're looking to expand their footprint in Renton by a lot.
Okay.
I don't know what that is.
That's the, it was space, Paul Allen's space. Kind of like the Elon Musk.
SpaceX.
SpaceX.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But Paul Allen's version of it.
Bezos.
Bezos.
Yeah, Jeff Bezos.
Oh, that's right. Bezos, not Paul Allen. That's right.
Yeah. It's Jeff Bezos' version of SpaceX. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And I believe they just landed some contract for the lunar lander or something.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, no, I think it's a
4 good for Bezos. Now he can get himself another ship.
Yes.
To go with his other ships.
I think he's doing fine.
Yeah, he's kind of made good.
He's got a fleet for his boat.
A billionaire has its own stress. Poor guy, you know. So, I mean, and it's never easy.
Add another little boat to follow his massive
big boat.
And that is also something. I mean, we're all close to the same age, but the whole space. The explosion of space travel touristing already, you know.
Yes.
I mean, it's a pretty amazing technology.
Well, it's monetizing space, right?
Yeah.
And that's how you get exploration, is you monetize it either through military or through travel.
Right.
I prefer the military. I prefer the travel, right?
Depends on the day.
Than the military, right?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. My son was just telling me that they want to do a... the Army now, National Guard for the Space Force, which I thought was going to be.
I think.
Have they already done that?
Yes.
Okay. He was just telling me about it, and I thought.
I believe there is a.
That's what I thought we had the Air Force for, but.
There's a fifth leg of the armed forces
I mean, it makes sense. It's just another dimension, right?
At some point.
It's
protect the base on the moon or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we still have adversaries on Earth. I try not to think about it, but it's very true. So.
Right.
Did anybody else notice that the Space Force's logo is very close to Starfleet and Star Trek?
Like Star Trek, that's nice.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Very similar. Very similar.
Right.
I was like, they're not original at all, are they?
Well, you are the mayor. You've been the mayor for 3 years now, 3.5?
I'm in my fourth year.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, congratulations.
And you head up about 600 or so city employees, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Everything from the parks to the... But you had just mentioned a little bit ago that you sort of... I don't know if you started it or it was on a executive order or whatever, how the mayorship works, but the new housing group, the committee that you started.
Yeah.
Can
Equity
you tell
Housing
us?
Yeah. Human Services. Yeah, that was... So the idea behind that really was to elevate three smaller departments that were buried in other departments. Human Services was buried in Parks, Housing was in CED, and Equity was out of the mayor's office. And with all that was going on nationally, and you saw kind of the groundswell around George Floyd and just the things that were going on. Renton had already taken a lot of steps forward around equity, and we were already doing a lot of work with Human Services and Housing, but it was a opportunity, and it's still a little bit under construction to seeing how it works, to make sure those three work together. Mm-hmm. It just felt like there was an opportunity there.
Sure. And that's out of your office?
Right. It's actually its own department. It has an administrator and it has a budget.
Jeez,
yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. No, it's a legitimate administrator. So, you know, Mary Jane, the administrator that's overseeing it is doing a fantastic job. It's a heavy lift to create something out of whole cloth, right?
Yeah. And especially when you're not, I mean, you want the results to be so impressive that they're obvious, but things like that are often subtle, right? So it's like,
Well, and there's so much going on around that. You want to you want to really lock it in and institutionalize, make it your practices, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of it just being a box that you check or things that you say, there are things that we're actually doing and putting in place that make a change on how we do business and how we create opportunities for everybody in our city. The one that is the easiest to explain and the one that we just did fairly recently is we have something that's called a blind application. So the first round of your application goes in with just a number. So there's no unintentional bias by a name you can't pronounce.
What is the application for employment or
employment?
For, okay.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
So application for employment. And then once the application gets through based on its credentials, then the name is attached.
Sure.
But the early part of the process, nobody's being weeded out by unintentional biases or intentional.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
So, and it seems now that you've mentioned that, how come that hasn't always been that way anyway? Right? But I'm glad that you're making it that way and that this...
So that leads me to the next part of this is that a lot of times you don't know what you don't know,
sure.
Right?
There you go.
So it's like you don't know that there's a problem. And that's the other group that we formed. And this started even before I was mayor. It was something I was thinking about, and I talked a little bit about the previous mayor, too. Is that we've got this group called the Mayor's Inclusion Task Force, and they were formed with the idea of communicating with our neighbors of all different ethnicities, and there's LGBTQ group in there, there's the Indian group, there's every ethnicity that we can get a leader or somebody that belongs to that group to come and participate. And it's really an information exchange. Okay. We let them know what's going on in the city. They let us know what's going on in their individual communities. And it stemmed from an incident that happened years ago. We had a cold snap. People lost their power. And there were folks bringing hibachis into their apartments. And we had some residents die because we couldn't tell them not to do that.
Right.
And so the Mayor's Inclusion Task Force was really formed to create that conduit. The problem is, as they were around, they were used for other things, like looking at certain items. You know, are we doing this right or that right? And as a council member, I remember our other council members saying, they really don't do anything. They're not really doing the heavy lifting around equity. But that was really never their intention. So as an incoming mayor, I had this idea. It's like, is there room for two groups? A group that does that communication and a group that actually does the work, the policy level work and looking at the way we operate and do business. And so I brought that question to the Mayor's Inclusion Task Force. And we had a number of meetings and in the beginning, they were like, I'm not sure what you're trying to ask us here. And after a few meetings, they got it. And they said, yes, there's room for two groups. We don't want to do that. That's more heavy lifting that we're looking for. And so we spent a year having these individual meetings with individual groups and asking them, should we do this? If we do, how does it look? How should it operate? Who should we invite to be on the board? How should the board operate? And after getting that information tabulated together, we came back and formed what's now considered the Equity Commission. And we treat them, there's 9 individuals, and they were, there was a separate group that went out and did all the interviewing of the applications. And so my job was just to point 9 of the 11 names that I was given. And so then, like, how do you treat them? What is their role, right? Because we just don't want another window dressing item here. They have to actually matter. And so I came up with the idea of treating them very similar to the Planning Commission. And that is that staff brings them information, either a policy that's already in place or something that we're looking to change or a new policy, and just tell them what the policy is. And then let them make comments, suggestions, ideas, and then that information is then given to the council. It's up to them what they do with it. The elected officials ultimately have to make these decisions, but now they have the power of having these policies looked at through a different lens.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's in its infancy. It's new.
Have you seen that in other places, or do you think Renton is kind of on the cutting edge of that kind of?
So the second meeting we had, one of our board members asked me, or no, the second meeting with our board member said that in our first meeting, I made the statement that there's not a lot of groups doing this, and she's an educator. So she went and tasked her students to go out and look and see what they could find in the state. They couldn't find it. And then she said, well, look in the nation. And so there are folks and groups trying to do this, trying to do different versions of it. The key has been, how does it operate, and what is their kind of authority, and what are they really tasked with doing? And so to answer your question, no, there's not a lot of groups doing it. There's people trying to figure this out, and this is it's kind of a new thing.
Still kind of a work in process here, but it has, you've actually changed policy, or the council has been presented with stuff that they've been able to.
They've asked questions that, you know, staff are just with their mouth is open.
Yeah, sure.
We didn't even think about that, right? Sure. I mean, really good questions, because they're looking at things through different lens.
Data that's been given to them by the constituents, so they can make a more informed decision. I love layered democracy.
Well, and the beauty to it too is when staff brings information to the council wants to know that the staff has done the work and brought the best possible. They don't want it finished. They want it, you know, par-baked or almost done. The council gets to make those final decisions. But they want to know that councils, or that the staff's really done the heavy lifting, and that there's not a lot of question marks out there. That's not what the Equity Commission wants. They don't want to be told that it's all right. They want to just present it. We'll let you know if it's all right.
Yeah.
So it's been a little bit of a change for our staff in terms of how they present to that group and what the group is looking for. So,
well, between that group and as diverse as the city council is, I think that, you know, is going to go a long way to sort of root out any of these issues surrounding, you know, diversity and making sure everybody's represented and that certain policies don't infringe, I guess, on somebody else.
A lot of it is, it really, a lot of it comes down to taking barriers away.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. It's more so than, you know, than inequities. It's really about creating pathways for people to be able to have those same kind of opportunities.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
And what I've found is that when you find something that that needs to be changed, that change is really easy. The lift is like, changing the going to blind applications, that's a no-brainer, right? Those kind of changes are really easy. They're not something you don't have to push people or drag them along. It's like, yeah, we should do it that way.
Yeah. I remember talking with Ed Prince before your election a few years ago, and we were talking about the mayoral race and his race, of course, and city council stuff. And you know, I didn't come out and ask him who he's voting for, but he wouldn't tell me anyway, because he said, you know, I'm friends with both candidates and I'm not going to pick a side here. How is your relationship with the council?
I think I have a good relationship with the council. I would consider a number of them my friends. I mean, I've been on council or at the city with it. Here's one of the things that you need to know is when you become the mayor, your relationship with the council changes dramatically.
I would bet.
And it's so funny because I remember being a council member kind of sitting back there talking about what the mayor's doing. Right? Now I know I'm in my office and they're back there talking about what I'm doing. Right?
Your ears are burning.
Yeah. The first couple of months you think, oh, hey, we're still friends. It's like it changes. And I have a great relationship with Ed and Ryan, Ruth and Valor. We've got two new council members that I have to say are amazing. James Alberson is doing phenomenal work. Valerie's doing a great job as the council president this year.
Oh, yeah.
And frankly, Ruth Perez has been quite a leader on the council. So, we've got some really good council members, and you know, they care. The thing is, I always say that council members, they're either there for one of two reasons. It's very simple. They're either there because they care about their community, or they're trying to, or they're there for themselves. Right, they're looking for higher office,
or resume, or something.
Or that's a stepping stone, and you know, it's their personal agenda thing, and so, it usually shows through. So, Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. We have four council members and myself up for re-election.
Yeah.
This year,
so. Yeah. Quite a bit. Yeah.
But,
and you,
but that's, I mean, a yeah. really good litmus test, right? Yeah. For how things are going. I think that's a majority of the council, right?
And, yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, so, and we were talking about this earlier. I think we would all agree that we, you know, not that we want somebody to unseat you, but it's never great when you're got a candidate that's running unopposed, right?
Unless you're the candidate.
Unless you're the candidate. Yeah. yeah. Then yeah. then you spend way less money, right?
Yeah, there's that.
I tell you what, I have to say that I've had some of the toughest races of any of the council members, and I've said this before, my first race was against Stuart Avery, and he was the golden boy of the library, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
yeah. He was no slouch, and he's a great guy. Yeah, I love yeah. Stuart. I wish he was still around, and yeah, frankly, I wish he was on council.
Yeah.
And then my re-election was against Diane Dobson.
Oh, yeah.
Right? A force yeah. of nature. So
right.
yeah. she's doing great work on the as the chamber director, yeah. and I think she's really found her stride there.
And it's her birthday today.
That's oh, right. Happy oh, birthday.
Happy birthday. Yeah.
yeah, no, I like that. Yeah.
When does it, when will this air?
Friday.
On oh, Friday, yeah.
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 Gives us a couple of days to kind of edit things and.
Yeah, put words in your mouth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just hit them.
And I think that.
We're going to use deep fake.
We'll pipe in a bunch of audience claps.
Oh, perfect.
I can look, do that right now, actually.
Make you look goofy.
No, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, can we get to know you a little bit, not just as the mayor, but sure. as a person. We're all about the same age. You guys yeah. went to the same high school yeah. together, but we're, a few years apart, right?
It's just a little younger than I am.
What? Yeah, I just don't look it. You have some hard miles, kids. Sleep in when you have the chance.
Sleep don't in. Have kids. Yeah. Is how you stay looking.
So you're both renting high grads,
both
right?
renting high grads, yeah.
Were you at Dimmitt? Where'd you go to middle
I
school?
I went to Dimmitt, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Lake Ridge, Dimmitt.
So you grew up...
grew up in Renton, yeah. My okay. father was a Renton police officer.
Oh,
for
wow. Okay.
25 career, right? years. Yeah
yeah, yeah. yeah.
His career was here. So, yeah, grew up in Renton. I opened a restaurant in downtown Renton in 1985.
Oh, wow.
Right out of school, right?
I graduated in 80, so I was out for a few years.
Okay.
I was in college and a friend of the family asked me to take a semester off to open a cookie store in downtown Seattle. And so that's where I learned kind of the trade of small business.
Okay.
And so we opened up a few stores in downtown. And then I took that experience and ended up opening up what I thought was going to be Pizza by the Slice in downtown Renton. And the idea was to build this little store up and sell it and go to college. That was the plan.
Sure.
You know, 30 years later, you wake up, it's like, how did I end up with a restaurant?
Wait, what?
So, yeah, opened in 85, and then I was in that location 20 years. We moved around the corner, and we were there for 10 years. So that restaurant was open for just over 30 years.
Wow.
And in 2001, we opened up what's known as the Melrose Grill, the steakhouse.
Yeah,
Frank.
And that came around from we had purchased the property as an investment 10, 15 years earlier. We had no intention of changing it. It was a fixture in Renton. It was a tavern, right? I mean, a lot of people had their first beer there. And so December 31st of 1999, they in the middle of the night, I was in Hawaii, they moved out. I got back from Hawaii, empty building. No idea that they were going to be gone. So we spent some time making sure the building wasn't going to fall over. There was a lot of repair that needed to go on. And then started looking for a tenant. And I thought about, you know, kind of, I don't know, rebooting the sandwich idea. I came up with a number of concepts. And then the final decision was, you know what, I need to get the restaurant that's in West Seattle, Jack's Steakhouse. They're in West Seattle and Issaquah. And they do phenomenal. And they're basically, the Melrose is a copy.
Melrose.
It is a copy of the Jack's. And so the idea was to get them to open up. And so I went and spoke with the owners a number of times. And they kept saying, we're not opening another one. So finally, the one owner that I found out later on, that the reason he didn't want to open up a restaurant is he was selling his share and leaving town.
Oh.
So he finally said, you just need to do it yourself. It's really a simple concept. And so that was how it all started. And back to the Renton ties, my original chef His name is Matt Snyder, Renton High graduate. He worked it for me as a dishwasher when he was 15 years old. And when he was 17, he was a dishwasher. Or no, he was a line cook. And Franco Phillips, my partner now, was a dishwasher at Armando's. This was in the early 90s. And so when I went to open the Melrose, Matt was in between restaurants. And so I talked him into opening or come in helping me for 2 years, and he ended up sticking around for a while. And then Franco, I coaxed him away. I knew his mother because she worked here in town.
She's great. She's fantastic.
And I coaxed him away from the keg. He had this reputation.
Remember
the keg? Over on Rainier?
No, the keg down towards
Camps. Down by where the movie theater used to be.
Because it was Sea Galley. Keg.
And the keg. And the restaurant business is, you know, you kind of trade people and stuff. And so he got a reputation as being like this real hotshot steak guy. And I'm like, we need one of them. So coaxed him away. And it took a little bit of convincing because he thought I wanted him to flip pizzas. He had no interest in that. And finally it's like, no, it's steak. Yeah. Let's talk. So.
Yeah. And you still, so that's still your restaurant there.
Yeah. I brought Franco in as a business partner 10 years ago.
Yeah.
8-9 years ago, something like that. And I was... I needed a break. Restaurant business is, well, you know, it's all about it. Restaurant
business. Why would anybody do that?
Yeah, it's I had part of the reason, a big reason why I shut down Armando's was my kids were really little. I have two kids. They're now 15 and 13, Roman and Dominic.
And really good kids.
They're really good kids. I'm lucky. And so they were young, and the economy was tipping over, which meant that I was going to have to go back and work, you know, 90-hour weeks again. It's like either raise my family or get rid of one restaurant. And so...
Yeah.
And I missed it because I had to get up and use the restroom. What's your restaurant?
The Melrose Grill.
Oh, the Melrose. Okay. Yeah. My dad actually... his dad, his name is Ted Sellers, apparently lived in that place when it was a hotel back in, like... Way back when.
When it had the second story?
When it had the second level.
It had three stories.
Or three
stories.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was, so I have the history on the Melrose.
I don't know if there was a restaurant in the building back then.
Yes.
But I think he might have worked there too.
So the Melrose was built by a gentleman named Ben Atkinson. And him and his wife went to the Yukon to... you know, dig their fortune. And he was one of the few that found gold up there.
Oh, geez.
Wow. And so he came back and settled in Renton and built the Melrose. I'm not sure what the building was called, but it was the Melrose Restaurant. And the bar was on the corner. And just to the right, where kind of the back of the restaurant is, it was twice as wide, the building was, and three stories tall.
Didn't know that. Huh.
And it was a boarding house. I've actually got pictures of the old kitchen. They're hanging up. Next time you're in the restaurant, look on the wall. There's a picture of the guy with a big pot on the stove. And the other little secret is if you're ever in there, all these old black and white pictures that we got from the museum, if you look really closely, every picture there's a little English terrier dog or American terrier dog, like a black and white spot, and that we call it the ghost dog, right? Because it's not stopping. Back then you had to stand still for the photo.
Yeah.
So the dog's a little bit of a blur, but in every photo, this dog is there.
Is running through.
Kind of walking through. So.
So when I moved back to Renton, my dad was like, you know, find out about the Melrose, because I guess his dad, my granddad, who I never knew, like either he lived there, he worked there, or both, or whatever. But my grandpa Ted, the way my dad talks, is the one who created the Sloppy Joes and whatever else. So I was just, okay, cool. I'll find out if I ever do. You know,
nice.
It was a boarding house, and there's rumors that it was a brothel at some point. Rumors are, but there was a fire, and the date of the fire's up for debate, and also the reason for not saving it is up for debate. And what I've been told from different folks is that the train that used to go right through the middle of town, that was kind of the middle of town years ago, was in town, and it stopped the ability for people to get water to the fire, and so the fire spread. faster and further. And so they saved what's now, you know, the Melrose Restaurant. And there's actually a crawl space in between the roof and the ceiling of the restaurant. And it's kind of pitched like this. And you can belly crawl to the middle of it. And I can I can see the, you can see the parquet, hand-laid parquet floor of the bathroom upstairs.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. Yeah.
What is the date of the remaining building? The 20s?
No, it was built in 1898.
Jeez, what?
Yeah. No, it was 1800s. Yeah.
Wow, wait, I did not know.
Last century.
Not yeah,
the, before.
The fire was, I think, in the late 20s. That's,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. There was.
I heard service linen started it so that they could get that.
So they get those.
Just kidding.
So the on opening night, there was two couples that owned it. The Natuzzis and the Bertoli family owned it, and they ran it as a bar. They were the ones that were known for the big sandwiches.
Sure. Oh, no, okay.
And out of the four of them, there was one of the ladies that was still alive, Natuzzi, and I forget her first name. She was my first customer because I knew I knew one of the family members. We invited her down. She's in a wheelchair. She's in her 90s. And we wheeled her to the back of the restaurant. We hadn't even opened yet. And I got to sit there and talk to her. And she was telling stories about the restaurant, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, talking about the wood, the coal stove and the, you know, the miners going downstairs to get coal so it'd keep the place warm, and just really fun stories about the place.
That was one of the things that my dad talked about, is he would talk about the places that his dad worked and lived, and Melrose was one of those things he always asked me about whenever I call him and say, you ever get down there? I'm like, no, Dad, I, you know, it's kind of a nice restaurant, I don't have the money for it. So I'm a McDonald's kind of guy. Dollar menu. So my dad had lots of stories. I didn't even know what stories to believe and which were like fictional or whatever. Or because he had Parkinson's, a lot of his memory was kind of Swiss cheesed.
Yeah.
Yeah. The memories, the history and memory sometimes they change and go back and forth. That's why the History Museum, we've got an amazing asset. They've got a great collection and
it ties to the Smithsonian.
Yeah.
No, they have all sorts of cool stuff.
Yeah, my grand.
I've never been in that museum. I need to.
Yeah.
My grandmother was a Tonkin, so we're actually related to the Tonkin families, all of the park, and there was a general store and a number of things. And if you go in the museum, there's an organ, a church organ, that was donated by my grandmother. That was her mother's organ. She played in the Renton church here.
Oh, wow.
So,
I worked for the Tonkins at Taco Time.
There were two brothers. That was the other the other side.
Yeah.
We were the bad side, I think.
The black sheep of the family.
We're the black sheep side. I don't know. I'm just kidding. That's what I was joking.
Well, let me ask you this. Being from Renton, you got your family here. What is your absolute favorite thing to do in Renton?
What is my... I eat at the Melrose.
A little self-serving,
that was an easy one.
I'm going to have to go down there now.
Yeah, no, we should... Well, let's make a night of it, boys. We could do that.
Hell yeah.
We can make a reservation.
Yeah, we can do it.
Yeah. I mean, we're very fortunate. We've got amazing parks in Renton. Lots of... There's so much stuff to do. And Renton is just growing. I mean... Who gets a Topgolf, right? I mean, we seem to, because of our geographic location, which is, you think people would have figured it out years ago, that we're kind of the center of Puget Sound, Bellevue, Seattle, Tacoma.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really starting to be realized. We've got an organic healthcare cluster in the valley down there. It's not just Valley Medical. There's our number. Like, I believe 99% of any transplant organ or tissue travels through Renton. There's a facility down there that actually sends it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's proximity to all the other cities and the airport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing. No, Renton's got everything anybody could ever do.
Everything you could ever want.
We're right on the very southern tip of a beautiful lake.
Beautiful lake. We had a river.
Coulon's amazing. You know, we have a salmon berry.
Oh, man. Yeah. I have lots of memories of going to Coulon Park during the summer as a kid, because when I was a toddler and up until about middle school age, we lived in Renton, and I lived in on Sunset even. We used to go to Coulon every summer, and we'd have picnics and stuff. I don't know if people can barbecue at the park anymore, but we did back then.
Yeah, you bet.
And so, and I just have lots of memories of being down there and seeing people racing their boats on the lake, you know. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, even before the remodel, when it was just kind of a boat launch with some metal big toys.
Cobra chickens everywhere. And,
Clint Eastwood, I think, was a lifeguard there at one point, right?
At Kennedale.
That's a little farther up.
Farther north,
Actually,
he would have just held me under for like 15.
Yeah. I can tell you're going to be a problem, son.
Hey, mister. Mister.
So I have a question for you. How are you about like pop culture? I mean, with the dragons and stuff in Renton, how do you feel about all that stuff? And do you like pop culture? Do you comic books, you know, superhero movies, that kind of thing?
I like Deadpool. That's my favorite.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my favorite.
You got my vote, sir. I'll vote for you.
He's a one-issue voter. That was the issue.
I don't follow it a lot, but I mean, I've got teenagers, right? So you kind of... you know, you start off with Thomas the Train, and then you work your way up. So.
Thomas the Train to Deadpool.
We have a really active art community in Renton, and it's something that the city, and actually put a plug in for mayor. I know I'm going to meet with her soon. The city really wants to. I really want to lean into our art community and our history museum. The things that make cities unique. It's not just the people, but it's kind of your sense of place and history.
It really is. Yeah.
And that's something that Renton really has in spades. Is even if you're new to the community, you get a sense that there's a history and it's meaningful and it's rich and it's like. Not all little bedroom communities have that same feeling.
No, absolutely not.
And it's hard to put your thumb on it. Yeah. And you don't have to be third generation Rentonite to feel like you're part of it either. That's the other unique thing of Renton. I always joke and say Renton's like a giant clique. But to be part of the clique, you just have to show up.
You just got to show up.
Yeah. That's literally it.
That's true. And you've talked many times about wanting Renton to be more of a destination place rather than a drive-through place, a pass-through place. Do you think art is the way to make that happen?
So that goes back to that original comment about economic development. And it really is having – it's not just art. It's all of it. So when you're a city that you've got housing, you know, then you want to have a restaurant or a shop or being able to provide all the services and the ability to work in your community. That's what really makes a drive to city, you know, and that's the difference between Bellevue and other cities, right?
Yeah.
People aren't driving through it. Well, you are driving through it, but you know what I mean? It's, and so it's that finding that balance of economic development and residential growth.
Sure.
Yeah.
We got to keep the lights on.
Yeah.
And I think Renton also, you know, because a lot of places have brain drains, and we don't have that. But unlike Everett, which is kind of the county seat, you know, Renton has Seattle and Tacoma and all this kind of stuff. And I think a lot of artists have left, right?
Yeah.
But I think less and less all the time. Because especially recently, there has been a push to value art and artists in Renton. And it is, I feel it in every cell of my body. That it's gonna pay off. Yeah. That it does, because art does have an intrinsic value. Thank you.
Yes.
But it really is. It's gonna pay off.
And Renton has a lot of really cool looking things. If you walk through downtown, there's all the fire hydrants are painted, and I think
that's fantastic.
I think that's really cool. And then of course there's the giant dragon on top of the building on Third and Wells, which I think is really cool. I can never remember the dragon's name.
Erasmus.
That's what it is. Okay, but I was driving down the other day, and I was stopped at the light, I took a picture of it. I said, there's a dragon, and we got that whole city center, you know, just a couple weeks ago. They had Renton City Retro, which was a retro gaming convention, and they had arcade machines and pinball and lots of vendors selling cool stuff, and they had the they had the voice actors from a anime from the early 2000s as like the special guests, which was really cool.
They're sitting right where we are right now.
They were.
Yeah.
I say more dragons. Can we get more dragons?
I would love to see more dragons.
I want a dragon on every block.
So
you think I'm kidding, but
no.
I actually am serious too. I think it would be cool. Oh,
so we have the dragon that was down at the Southport, right?
And it's a hotel, right?
Yeah, we picked that up and brought it to City Hall because the buildings are going to auction here shortly.
Oh yeah.
So back to the comment you were making about art, I can tell you that we did this swap, the mayor of Everett and I, where I went to her city, she came to my city, and we kind of showed each other around, talked about what we're doing, and just kind of, we both were elected at similar times. And so when I went up there, the one thing that I felt envious about was their art.
Huh.
It was interesting. It's like, I wouldn't trade any of the assets. I mean, they're on the water. They've got some amazing features in Everett, but I wouldn't trade anything with Everett from
Can we Britain. Get the Funko Pop Batman that's like 8 feet tall?
Just all of Funko.
Bring Funko to Renton.
It wasn't just the Funko. They have more than just the Funko. I think part of it is the history. You know, they've been a 100,000 resident city for a lot of years. Okay. We're new to the game on being a larger city.
Yeah.
Sure.
So. I still think we should get some Funko Pops that are like sit them on each at the corner of the streets. Yeah.
That's not our shtick. We can't steal somebody else's shtick.
Yeah, we've got a really cool dragon.
Oh, you know, since we have Wizards of the Coast, maybe we should just have some giant wizards like hanging out and fighting the dragon.
Well, if they want to provide that,
Hasbro, for the record, has all of the money.
Yeah.
Hasbro is doing just fine.
Yeah.
Feel free to sponsor us, Hasbro.
I would love that.
You mentioned Southport. How is Southport? What's going on with Southport?
Yeah. What happened there? Do you know?
I know exactly what happened. It's very, very unfortunate, and it is a timing thing, right? I mean, COVID could not have timed up worse for the developer there. I mean, he did everything possible, and he actually had a tenant lined up just before COVID hit, and they backed out. And then you go 2 years with no tenant, and then you come back out of it. People aren't coming back to work. Businesses are trying to, get people to come back. And with the interest rates going through the roof, you just couldn't carry it, couldn't fund it. And to his credit, he put everything on the line to keep that thing going. And the real sad part about this is that in the end, Renton is going to have this amazing hotel and these amazing office buildings that will have some cool business in there, right? He just won't be part of it.
Sure.
That's kind of the sad part. It's
one of the best locations you could ever dream of.
And
it's amazing.
And the office buildings, it's class A. There's very few buildings in Seattle that are as nice. He built beyond value engineering. The stuff he put into the the hotel and the office.
The Hyatt remains though, right? The Hyatt's still in good financial shape. Or is that part of that same parcel that's up for auction?
No, the Hyatt isn't up for auction. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like it's doing great, actually. So.
Yeah, it's doing fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So. The wife loves that restaurant. She works at Packard and heads over, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no,
the view out there.
Oh, yeah, no, it's unreal. Yeah.
The outside deck where you can sit out there because of the heat.
Yeah.
Right.
You can still be outside because of those radiant meters. So, yeah.
And the only time I've ever been at the hotel was like 3 years ago when King Con Northwest was there.
Oh, sure.
They had all the. LARP people, the live action role play, outside in a little courtyard, and had their foam swords and daggers and whatever else.
Lightning
in
bolt.
Lightning.
Yeah, showing people how to do that stuff. It was actually kind of fun to watch.
Right.
But
Mr. Mayor, do you have like a singular achievement that has happened during? It doesn't have to be your singular achievement, but even just a Renton broader achievement during your tenure so far that you're most proud of.
Well, guiding us through COVID is probably one of the bigger ones.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think one of the things that I'd like residents to know is that a lot of cities really struggled through COVID. We didn't just make it through. We actually moved the needle forward. We got things done and made some significant improvements and changes. But there, you know, in terms of individual items, one of the big ones has to be the Family First community center that's going to be open. That's the
beautiful.
Yeah, that's the project with Doug Baldwin.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
And really, that's where things are headed for cities, is working in concert with other organizations. So we have one with the school. We've got the Meadowcrest Inclusive Playground up in Sunset area, and then we have a daycare center that we're working with. There's an offshoot of the Bezos Group, where we gave them a 20-year lease on a facility, and they're giving, you know, long-term daycare year-round, and I think it's 10 hours a day, 3 meals a day for 25 or 30 families.
Wow.
So these kind of partnerships are really key to making a difference and providing better and more services. And so this project, the Renton Family First Center, is a teamwork between the City of Renton, the Renton School District, the Doug Baldwin Foundation, and HealthPoint. And it's no easy lift to get, you know, three large organizations to kind of line up, and who's going to run it, who's going to pay for a light bulb. But I mean, you can imagine all the little details that need to go on. Once the facility's built, we hand them the keys, and then they operate it.
And it's a one stop for all sorts of really important resources.
There's nothing like it.
Yeah.
He's kind of changing the mold on what community centers could be.
Thank you, Doug Baldwin.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it is cool. Amazing, and the best part about it isn't the facility; it's the team he put together to get this thing kicked off. He really did a good job finding folks to run this place. They understand the business of it, and their heart's in the right place, and they're going to do a fantastic job. I mean, there's always the nervous part. It's like, you know, we got a football player going to run a family center. It's like, you know, how's this going? Are we going to end up with it ourselves? Kind of fear. But when he hired Nate and Jackie and the rest of the team, it's like the fear went away. It's like, okay, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. No, I mean, some of the wisest people know when to step away, right?
Yeah.
Just get that.
Yeah. Finding the right people,
the right
to
team,
So
jeez,
it's going to be fun. It's opening up here soon. If you guys get a chance, come to the ribbon cutting, groundbreaking stuff. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
We had a little planning session over down the street at Common Grounds this past weekend, and we did ask a few Renton citizens.
Yes, we did.
You know, what they would ask you if they could.
Oh dear.
So.
They're all good questions, sir.
They're great questions. The biggest, I think, thing that is on people's mind is crime and safety.
Yes.
I know one of the initiatives that you've kind of pushed for or had done or worked with the chief of police is to get a beat patrol in downtown Renton here. And I was excited about that because I've been thinking about that for, that's, you know, one of those things that, oh, that's what they should do. That's what they should do. Of course, I never emailed you the idea, but so it's great to hear that that kind of thing is happening.
Yeah. So this is a long one. I got to take a breath before we start talking here. So the, it goes back to everything that happened around George Floyd and kind of the vilification of police officers. And don't get me wrong, there were police departments that needed wholesale change. And everybody was lumped into starting point zero. So even departments that were doing a good job basically had to earn your stripes over again. And coming from a family of, you know, where my father was an officer, I grew up around other police officers, and I kind of, you know, it's not like being a cop, but you're around it and you witness it firsthand. And I've kind of oversimplified the profession down to there's two kinds of departments. There's departments that are peacekeepers, and then there's departments that are warriors. And that's oversimplification, but it's a mindset. And something that the previous mayor started with the previous chief, and we've continued it, is really hiring and creating a culture and training. It's all about de-escalation. It's about what their role is in the community, time and distance, providing them the tools and the resources to not do some of the things that you see out there. The problem is when they do something really stupid in another city, it makes all the cities look bad.
It makes everybody look bad. Yeah.
So it was a needed kind of change to go on, and we got caught up with the rest of them. We lost a lot of amazing officers. One of our SRs, which is the student resource officer at the school, we lost, was really changing the way that work was being done, and we lost him to that kind of time and place. So we were 20 plus officers down for a number of years, and with not a lot of possibility of changing that number. So even if you come up with a great idea of having people in downtown walking around, there's no bodies. Yeah. And so, yeah. So some of the things that have happened, number one is the kind of the change where we're starting to see more officers back in the profession again. And Renton has always been one of those model departments that other officers will actually leave a department and come to us. And we attract, we just always have led the region in terms of departments and how we operate. And so we're slowly getting back up to speed. And I think the chief said that hopefully by the end of the year or within the next year, we'll be fully staffed. We did go to council with a budget request before the beginning of the year to add four officers. Even though we had 18 empty spots, but we still asked for four more officers with the reason of creating a downtown emphasis patrol and creating those relationships with businesses down here, having a presence.
And locals, yeah.
But you can put 100 officers down here if they don't have the tools to make changes. Then it's for naught. And so I've spent the last 2 years going hoarse trying to convince legislators to make changes in the law to allow officers to do their job. And you know, the big one was the Blake decision.
Those aren't my pants, or they're not my drugs.
What's that? Those are not my pants, they're not my drugs. You know, they could have fixed that by adding the word knowingly. That's all they had to do. Instead,
they just got lazy.
They used the opportunity to politicize the entire subject. And there are individuals out there that believe that all drugs should be decriminalized. And it's not working out very well for Portland, frankly.
Yeah.
My personal belief, which I'll lay on the table, is I think that there's too many people loving people to death. I think that there's too many individuals patting themselves on the back for making people comfortable in their misery. And that if you truly care about somebody, then you're going to care enough to get them the help they truly need.
Sure.
And that's what we were really asking for with the Blake fix. It's not, oh, we want to throw people in jail. It's about the war on drugs. And it's not about that. It's that people are dying on the street. We're at 47 right now. Where are we going to be by the end of the year?
Yeah, no, it's awful. It's awful.
And that doesn't include the people that we saved with with Narcan. And so, you know, King County's going to blow past 1,000. That doesn't include the numbers that were saved with Narcan. So, you know, the idea that there's this fight against, you know, destigmatizing drugs, it's not about the individual's, you know, moral bar in some way. It's about if you're saying they're sick, then the right thing to do is give them help, right? I mean, how the logic trail doesn't work, it's like if somebody had cancer, you'd want to get them the help they need to fight cancer, but we don't treat drug addiction the same way.
We certainly have not. I mean, the war on drugs has been prosecuted for almost 50 years, right?
Yeah.
It's been, we just need to be more data driven and in actually looking for solutions in this, and be data driven and find out what sorts of treatments are going to be effective.
Yeah.
You know, because until we get rid of, you know, because it's awful. It's awful. And fentanyl, because they used to have to import it from like the the Golden Triangle, like 8,000 miles away. Yeah. Now it's...
They're making it in Mexico.
Oh, man, I mean, it's awful.
Yeah.
It's awful. And until we have that exit strategy of some type of treatment, whatever the data tells us is going to work, you know what I mean?
That yeah.
I don't see an exit out of it.
And the part of the problem is that Seattle politics has found its way to Olympia, and they're such an 800-pound gorilla. They're driving the narrative, and that's why you're seeing the kind of gridlock on issues is because of that. You know, and there's very few people that'll push through the noise and actually stand up for where they believe. I mean, that the three mayors put down in the South End, myself, Nancy Backus, and Dana Ralph, we were getting destroyed by our residents. They were like, you guys need to let the police do their job. You need to start arresting criminals that are doing drugs. And so we put a letter out a number of months ago, basically asking the county and the state to help us with this issue, that it's an issue. And everybody thought it was like, it was all about making this change. It's like a lot of it was to let the residents know what is actually going on.
Sure.
And get them educated about why we're doing what we're doing. The pursuit law is another one that's off the charts. I mean, they're acting like they're saving lives with the pursuit law. Yeah. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. The other part of it, too, is
I also think the police kind of overreacted with that. It's not as restrictive on them, I think.
It is. They have,
it is? It really?
Is. It is.
All right.
It is.
Because I read it a few times. I'm like,
Here's the problem is who wants
to take that chance?
Who wants to take that chance?
Sure. I guess you're right there.
I'm not going to risk my not only my career, but possibly my freedom, take that risk. Nobody's going to do it. Part of the problem is they could have done that work behind closed doors. We already had almost a zero pursuit law in Renton. It took an act of Congress in Renton to pursue. The minute that the state said no more pursuit, the criminals were like,
oh yeah, no, it's just
they flip people off and drive off. You didn't have to do that.
Yeah,
you didn't. Yeah. You just basically gave every criminal an upper hand.
Yeah.
And it was a knee jerk reaction to an issue, and it was
any accidental death is one too many. I get it, but it's not like it was.
But how many deaths are happening now?
It wasn't like 1,000 ODs in the county, was it?
Right.
Right.
Not even. Not even close. Well, the number of deaths.
And it's awful. I mean, it's awful. Yeah. I'm not going to diminish it because accidents do happen.
Yeah.
But it's.
Yes.
I mean, come on. Yeah.
Yeah. There.
And a lot of I really think that people are up in arms about crime because crime is very real. Property crime, especially, but a lot of it is perception, and I think that's where. Beat cops, and we used to have the bicycle police, etc. It's like people seeing them, it just gives them that psychological boost.
Yes.
Right? It's
yes.
like.
Yeah, because again, like Mike was talking about, the perception is we've got the Ring cameras now, we've got the Nextdoor app.
Red
we've
Mar,
got.
They're like, I saw a man.
Yeah.
I mean, is that because it seems to me, and you can look at the statistics, and I kind of did some research, and it was sort of all over the place, right? But it seems like the heavy hitters will say the murder rate, the rape, the aggravated assault stuff is down, but it's the property crime that's up, right? Does that sound about reasonable?
Yeah.
I think that is very true, yeah.
But then it's, everybody's got the app now. It's like Mike was saying, I saw somebody strange in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And people are in tune to it now. My wife, for a little bit, had an app on her phone that was actually sort of regurgitating the police radio, right? It would take the police calls, and she would say, oh, my God, there's something happening right now. It's like, honey, you need to put it away and don't freak out.
The human body's geared up for stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's like we just have to be self-monitoring, right? Don't panic, people. It's okay. We're living in a golden age right now. We really are.
Yep.
So
I'm still waiting for the flying cars.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Sure, we're not there.
The I know one of the things that upsets people is the shootings, and one of the things, and it's this doesn't make it any better, but it brings it into focus, and that is that. The people who are doing the shootings against each other, it's not random. It's not you or I walking down the street, right? I mean, it's intentional, and it's from folks that don't live in Renton shooting other folks that don't live in Renton. This just happens to be where they're at the time that they cross paths. And that doesn't mean that we don't have people here.
Some Renton people go bonkers too.
There are some Renton people that go bonkers.
But this is, I've never felt that this was, and especially for the size of city that it is.
Yes.
No, it's not an unsafe place. It's not.
Yep.
And I've seen too that, you know, people complain that, you know, you call the police and if it's not a major crime, they don't do anything. You know, they're not going to come out. And it's completely untrue, because I actually looked at some of the police reporting, and a lot of it was, you know, under $50 crime stuff that they actually went out and made a report, whether it was, you know, shoplifting at Walmart or you know, whatever. But yeah, it's not true. They do show up, and they are out there.
If I could leave your audience with like one message, it would be call 911 and use Renton Responds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are the two things, and input from people gives us the data.
Yeah.
Right.
In case there's someone who doesn't know, like myself, what is Renton Responds?
So Renton Responds is an app, and it's basically, it allows residents the opportunity to let the city know when something needs to be addressed in the city. So whether it's an encampment that popped up in the neighborhood park, or it's somebody ran over the stop sign, or there's graffiti. Obviously, if it's a 911 call, call 911.
911, right?
But if it's not, don't, and go.
Renton Responds. Okay.
And so you see your neighborhood at the stop sign at the end of the streets fallen over because somebody ran it over. You take a picture of it, you upload it. You can do it anonymously or you can do it non-anonymously. You can follow it.
I'm installing it now.
It puts a pin dot on the map, and you'll get feedback on what's been done about it. And so what it does on our end of the thing, and when we first started it, we were really good on monitoring it and making sure things were taken care of. And like anything, with COVID and everything that went on, we got a little loosey-goosey. You get somebody leave a department, and so there's a gap and something falls through the cracks, and we've kind of gone back to the drawing boards and closed all those gaps up and make sure there's redundancy in the system. But what it really does for the city is it helps us with deploying resources, right? I mean, there's no way that we can have somebody on every street corner know where every sign that got knocked over is, right? But the force of the city helping with that information, the data is amazing. All of a sudden, we know.
And it helps the citizens feel engaged.
Yeah. And it helps the citizens feel
engaged. Yeah.
Is this another, lack of a better term, cutting edge that Renton's doing? Or is this something that we found other cities?
I'd love to take credit. No, this is technology that's been around for a while. We're not late to the game, but it's all how it's utilized. And it's the effort the city puts into making sure that it's monitored, because the last thing you want is somebody to use it and not have a good experience with it, right? Then it
defeats the purpose. So it'll come in Renton Response, and then somebody will sort of send it to the right department to take care of,
depending on what the issue is. It goes automatic to the right
department. Okay.
And then if it doesn't have a home, it goes to one person and then finds
they can
home.
Figure out the way to
so
do. And I would be remiss here, because my sister's big issue, and she was the one that put us together, is the unhoused crisis that the entire United States, especially in this region, is facing right now. And that's one of her biggest worries, because she was working at McClendon's and saw, plenty of things that, normal society doesn't.
It's always been around. It's worse right now.
Yeah. Is there.
I'm waiting for the question.
not really a question, just kind of trying to get to. I did read that you worked in conjunction with King County to set up over on Oaksdale the old hotel over there, which is a center that people can go to. You're going to have to tell me the name of it.
The Extended Stay.
The Extended
Stay. I
think
they renamed it, but it was the Extended Stay.
Yeah.
We were the first Housing First project. And there's a lot of misinformation around what's gone on around housing in Renton. A lot of it stems from kind of the political fight that was very public around the Red Lion, and everything that happened there. And you learn very quickly as a new mayor that you can't take on the county when it comes to PR and press. And you know, the idea with that was around COVID, it was about de-intensification and not having people, you know, clustered together. And that was the intention behind it. And that's where they feel like they invented the housing first model and give people this opportunity to do better. The problem is that you took kind of a community that needs the most intense services and took three of them and put them in one location and didn't provide the services. Yeah. And it was a location that really wasn't conducive for that. And it had a massive impact on the residents in that area, on the businesses in that area. They're still reeling from it and trying to dig their way out. But if you move past that, and our role in that, just so everybody make it clear, our role in that was coming up with a temporary use permit so that they could legally be there for a period of time.
Yeah.
The fight was they didn't want to give us that period of time. So we never said they had to leave. We just said it can't be permanent. And it can't be permanent by state law, right? Sure. I mean, it's against the code.
And it's not it's nothing any municipality can handle on their own anyway. It's not possible.
Correct.
It's not possible. It has to be, I think, a nationwide. It is a nationwide thing. It's just so obvious and, I mean, present right now, right?
Yeah.
In you know, King
County. Well, the part of the tragedy of this is that everybody's lumping everybody that needs services under this moniker of homeless, right? And the individual that's dealing with severe addiction issues and behavioral health issues is not the same as a mom that lost her job because she got a sick kid.
No, or didn't have $6,000 for first, last, and deposit.
Or, right. Yeah,
you know
what I mean? But they're both called homeless, and we look at them the same. The other kind of sad part of it is there's so much focus on the folks that are without behavioral health and mental issues and drug issues, that we're forgetting about this whole other group. There's a DV group, and there's a lot of folks that need assistance.
Yeah.
So kind of going back to trying to answer your question is, once again, I came up with the idea of putting together equity housing and human services. That housing component is to not only work with the city, but we're one of the few cities in the state that have our own homeless, our own housing authority.
Yeah.
So only King County, Bellevue, and Seattle, and Renton have a housing. We do more for housing than per capita than King County does by a lot, leaps and bounds.
Yep.
The amount of housing we provide, the amount of housing we build in affordability range. If King County kept up with us on the number of affordable homes, there wouldn't be the problem there is. But that's not the data that it's looked through, right? It's like, oh, you're not doing enough.
Yeah.
You're not taking your fair share.
Yeah.
Yes.
Looking at you, Duvall.
I'm not going to call any of my fellow mayors out. I did not say that.
That was Mike.
Yeah.
That was the other mayor.
Truck all email
to Mike at Renton City. Yeah.
But I'm also old enough to remember when Duvall was at the country.
Yeah.
It was at the countryside.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you want to know what the real tragedy is, and this is something I actually sent a personal letter to Inslee to veto the House Bill 1110. And everybody's taken a victory lap on House Bill 1110. And that's the bill that's basically allowing a fourplex on any lot. And, oh, we're going to build more houses. What they fail to tell you is it's only cities of 75,000 or more.
Yeah.
Mm.
And homeowners associations with codes and covenants are exempt, which is just another way of redlining. So
yes, it is.
So Bellevue and Redmond and Kirkland are like, yeah, we can do that, no problem. They're all homeowners association. So where is all of this going to go? It's going to go, and it's going to go to Renton, Auburn, Kent.
Yeah.
And it's going to
neighborhoods.
And it's going to the poor neighborhoods, and it's going to actually make it worse, because what's going to happen is developers are going to buy a house, put a fourplex on it, and it's going to be market rate, because that's what they can do.
Yeah.
And so they're going to take that affordable house out of the system. and displace another family at that level and create more market rate or or higher. And they're taking a victory lap on it. It's just, it's very unfortunate that it's not being pointed out what it truly is doing.
Yeah. And that's politics, right? I mean, that's...
It's disgusting is what it is.
It's just not helpful. I don't think that was a data-driven decision, right?
No.
I
think it was just kind of a
field. It's all... What happened is they built this law where we want to put fourplexes everywhere and create development out everywhere. And the only way they could get the votes is they slowly had to... Well, let's go from 25,000 to 75,000. Well, then you get all the cities join in. Or actually, let's do homeowners association. Sure. You get most of the cities. Still didn't have enough votes. Okay, we'll go to 75,000. Okay, now we got enough votes. There's only 16 cities. How do you find... So Association of Washington Cities voted to support the thing, right? They're like, the majority of our cities agree with this direction. It's like, well, of course. It doesn't affect the majority of your cities.
Well, we're sort of running low on time.
What?
Yeah, I know. This is a working theater here.
Oh, no, that's right.
Yeah. And they do have a production of Rent coming out.
I was waiting for tough questions.
Go to rentandcivictheater.org and check out the upcoming shows.
Yep, it'll be a blockbuster.
Okay, I do have a hard question for you. I have a hard question for you.
Boxes or briefs, man.
Don't say depends, because that's just wrong. No, the hard question is Star Wars or Star Trek?
Oh, geez.
If you had to choose one of those two.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, probably old school Star Trek.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
There's no wrong answer.
There is no wrong answer.
The funny thing is I love Big Bang Theory. So I was trying to remember. Somebody answered that question, and I was trying to remember the answer.
The answer from that.
From that. So.
What year did you graduate?
1980.
80?
Yes.
So probably your mixtape would be like maybe Cheap Trick, maybe a little
REO
Speedwagon, Journey maybe? Is that kind of where you fall?
Yeah, more 70s.
Okay.
So, Cheap Trick was definitely huge. Halen. Van Halen was
Van Halen,
huge.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Not Van Hagar, thank you.
No. Actually, Rock.
AC/DC is probably in there.
In case Ed watches this, it's all about Rush.
Sure.
Rush.
Our CAO at the city is a Rush fan.
A big Rush fan.
Nice. Those who because nobody is a casual Rush fan.
Either you like them or you know of them.
Neil Peart's a god, right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it.
Pretty much,
No, their weak link, like Alex Lifeson, is amazing.
Yeah,
their weak link. Weak link is astounding.
Yes. So if you haven't seen the 25th anniversary concert that South Park did, they invited Rush to come on stage with them. And one of the co-creators of the show, Matt Stone, was a huge Rush fan. So they invited the surviving members of the band to come out, and they played Tom Sawyer, Stone was playing drums on that. That was kind of cool. If you haven't seen it, look it up. I think it's on Paramount Plus.
But back to your original question. I was actually kind of a closet punk fan.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I knew there was something about my life.
So,
knew it.
Huge.
So, like 70s punk. So, Sex Pistols, Clash.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Nice.
Stiff Little Fingers.
Sure, great.
Favorite band.
Right. Yeah. They're Irish, the boat. That's great.
Do you consider Motorhead more punk or metal?
Metal.
Motorhead.
Yeah.
They're a little both, aren't they? Yeah.
Social Distortion's coming to the show box.
Sure.
I saw them about 5 years ago, but Mike has a story about fighting them, so
I
want to talk about that too much.
It's a long story.
Maybe I won't go.
And look at it too, kid.
punk
rock is alive and well.
It really is.
1980, went to the Ramones, right? At the showbox, standing in line, the whole thing. Took, half Friday out to go. We go in there. The week before, there was a punk concert at the Moore Theater, and they tore the place down. I don't remember who was playing, but I wasn't at that one. So 2 weeks later, we're at the Showbox Theater. Standing room only, crowded. The first band comes on. It's the Dirty Dish Rags, all-female punk band from Canada.
Nice.
Wow. And they are just exactly what you would imagine, right? And so they play a great set. They come out, the guy comes out from the back, and he's got this look on his face of distress, and he goes, I hate saying this more than you're going to hate hearing this, but Johnny Ramone's sick. He won't be playing tonight. We'll be giving you a refund. And I'm
this place.
I was expecting this place was going to come to the ground, right? It was the craziest thing. Everybody just orderly walked right out.
Really?
Like, it was bizarre.
I think that's a deep depression. That's what sadness
was. Yeah, I thought for sure it was just going to be this man. Yeah. So we got to see him the next week, but yeah.
So like 10 years ago, was the last time I went to the Museum of Pop Culture back when it was still called the EMP, and it just had added this exhibit called Northwest Corridor. That's what it was called. And it was basically about the punk scene in Seattle and how it evolved into grunge and all that. And I at that point I had never even considered grunge as part of punk, but now that I look back at it, I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
I mean, just if you can get past how people, they basically bought all their clothes at, the thrift shops and stuff, but it never occurred to me until I saw that, and I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Nice. Well, let's leave it with this one last question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
What's the toughest thing in your inbox right now? Yeah. I know you've got the old paper shuffle inbox, outbox on your desk.
The toughest task I have right now.
Yeah, what's the toughest thing that you're working on right now?
Let's see if I can actually... Why is this even up? There we go. Hold on. Coming back.
And if you say being on Our Town podcast.
I mean, that would be fair. It would be fair. Because, we've been hit. We've been so hard hitting with our questions.
We have been, yeah.
I think he was expecting us to be like browbeating him and shit.
No, no, because you guys sent me an example. So I thought it was going to be like.
Okay, cool.
So honestly, right now, God, I don't even like saying this out loud. There's not a giant.
Oh no!
I don't have a fire right now, which is very unusual.
Goodness! I'm glad goodness!
Getting more dragons into Renton—that's his hardest thing right now.
I know that the council is considering that, and they may have already passed it with a unanimous vote. But the drug,
The policy. Blake decision, So the state passed. And they left room for us to kind of take care of some of it. And one of the things that we filled in the blank on was you couldn't do anything around paraphernalia, but what we did is kind of the waste and disposal, because what people don't realize is fentanyl is just, it's just extremely unsafe for somebody that's not used to it. We just, today we had two officers end up in Valley because they got fentanyl exposure.
Wow. And through inhalation or by?
I think skin contact.
Yeah, it's so uncool.
I haven't gotten the details.
And don't forget the organized crime aspect of fentanyl, right? It's not like it falls out of the sky, right? It's organized, dangerous criminals the entire way.
Yes.
Right? It's not okay.
Yes.
It's not okay. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Drugs are bad. Okay.
When we were bringing the Blake decision fix to the council, we showed a few videos. And one of them we showed was an officer going up to somebody that was on the ground. That there was two people that were, had OD'd, and we were bringing them back with naltrexone. Come to find out, there was a video. What happened is one gentleman was doing the fentanyl, ODs. Another guy walks up, sees him there, picks up the fentanyl.
That's hardcore.
And does it in OD.
Yes.
And so they're both on the ground. And so, making it, basically making it an offense to dispose of it any willing. The sad thing is right now you could probably walk across the street to a window in the park and see colored ink with, blues or $3.
Wow.
They're actually writing it on windows in parks. If you see colored ink pens, that's...
Really?
Oh, yeah. They steal colored felt pens, and they'll do it. We try and keep that cleaned off. But that's one of the things I should have brought up is, the encampment issue and folks camping in Renton. We created we're calling it a SEPTED team. And the idea behind it is between Public Works and Parks Department, instead of having an abandoned encampment that's a disaster, we have to hire a company, wait for them to put it on the schedule and come in. We're bringing it in-house. It's costing us so much money. We've hired in-house staff. We're training them, giving them the tools.
Excellent.
To be able to do it in real time so that we can keep up with it and we're not waiting for a ServPro or another company to find a slot on the schedule to get us in on.
Are you able to get some funding from the county and from the state and from the feds or anything to help with that? Because this is not everybody who's living in Renton and throwing their trash everywhere is from Renton, right? It just becomes a Renton problem, so we have to pay for it.
We have to pay for it. The other part of this is there's something called SEPTED, where it's community safety through environmental design. And it's things like trimming the trees up 12 feet and down to 2 feet so that there's not a lot of places to hide. And you can, you're safer walking through a park if you can see the other side.
Yeah.
You light things, creating lighting. Yeah. So we're looking at that on a citywide level. So all of our public spaces and right-of-ways will be looked at through that lens of how can we clean and maintain and create safer places.
Sure.
Back before this Blake issue was addressed, I told Zav, it's like, we can't fix the crime and the homeless problem. We can fix the cleanliness, graffiti problem. And there are things that we can do. Let's do them.
Yeah.
And so what I'm hearing is now that when I find a pair of pants lying around on the street or in a tree,
don't go rooting through them.
Don't put your hand in there.
Yeah. Don't leave the pants. Yeah. What I'm hearing.
Or pick it up with a stick and throw them away.
And I do. I'm a litter picker upper.
Yes, so much.
And I understand that it's a.
That's when you get those.
But I have a picker upper in my van.
Yeah.
But then I also typically have at least a glove on me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that I don't have to make direct contact. That's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always carry nitrile gloves and a first aid kit.
Yeah. So they have those gripper things so you don't have to bend over. So you can just use those to pick them up and put them in a can or whatever.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah. Great volunteer opportunity. Todd, you should lead that this weekend.
Oh, yeah, because I got nothing else going on this weekend. I actually am going to go see The Little Mermaid with my niece this weekend and her family.
Nice.
Which is kind of funny because when that movie came out, she was a toddler, the original movie, and she watched that movie on VHS so much that she destroyed two VCRs and three tapes.
Nice.
And so the fact that I'm willing to go see this new one with her is huge for her.
A lot of kids wore out a lot of VCRs with the Frozen, too. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
So what's, before we sign off here, what's your sister's name again?
Kathy.
Kathy, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to give a shout out and say thank you to Kathy.
Yes, thank you, Kathy.
She's a sweet.
Is there a message you would like to let people know about Renton? Is there something top of mind? Come on down to Renton and enjoy
some kind of sales pitch.
You got a sales pitch?
Terrible.
We got a whammer deal for you at the top of the hill.
Miss Old King.
Say this catchphrase and get $10 off of Melrose.
No, I think that I guess if I had to wrap this up, I would say that Renton is in an amazing place. We are in a golden age, and Renton is, there's so much going on, and so many positive things happening in this community. We have fights like every other community, but we have a lot going for us, and a great community, too.
Yeah.
The trajectory we're on.
Oh, the trajectory is a good one. It's fantastic.
Is. Yeah.
People want to be part of what's going on here. So.
Yeah. Well, very good. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
This is my first podcast.
We're glad we broke the podcast cherry for you.
I picked up my kid from school. He's in high school. We're driving home. He goes, my friends were giving me a hard time because I told them I had to leave early because my dad asked to get to a podcast, and they were just giving a hard time. That's the bougiest thing I've ever heard.
Well, thanks again. Anything last minute words from you guys?
Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys. This was fun. Yeah, it really was. I enjoyed this. So.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Please like, subscribe, comment, and share. And if you think this episode is worth $1 or $5, the boys would love to have it. Please go to ourtownpod.store for merch or to donate now. For less than a cup of coffee, you can also join the website in the member-only area for exclusive bonus content, blogs, and more. It's just $3 a month or $30 a year. Thank you for listening to this production of Our Town Podcast Extraordinaire.